the topic for this evening's discussion is the rise of the single class, positive attitudes rise up. And I'm Joanne Holt, who will be leading the discussion this evening. I am an expert on this topic because I have lived probably in the single status longer than most people here this evening, so I will consider myself the expert to start with on singles in the sense of those who have never been married. But in this class, I would also put the unmarried, both those who are divorced and those who have had their husbands or wives die. I think that all of us have some common positive traits because of the situation, and we all have some of the luggage of society and of our churches with us in our pursuit of the single life, and so that all of us have similar, though dissimilar, kinds of experiences. I think my title could have been one of many. I thought of those that I have used in the past, such as singleness is not a disease, and I believe that. Or I could have used Noah's Ark 2x2 syndrome, which we find not only in the churches, but in most of the restaurants and in most of our invitations to dinner. They all seem to be in twos, fours, six, and eights. There's something that seems not to fit the odd numbers for those who are inviting guests who live primarily in a couple's world. But the second part of my title, Positive Attitudes Rise Up, I think gives you my own personal upbeat belief about what has happened in our society, and a lot of it within perhaps the last 5 years, on the role of singles in society. I think probably if we look at the percentages, I got the first part of our discussion, the rise of the single class, because there's been about a 16% increase in the population in our society and a 38% increase in the single society of adults. Therefore, the single society is growing faster than our normal society. And if we look at the society in which we live as adults, for every married couple, there is a single person. And so one in three of our adult society is single. And I think that's an amazing kind of statistic, given the assumption upon which most of us grew up. That is that singleness is not a blessing, but a curse, and that marriage is best, as opposed to the flip side, which might be singleness is best. And marriage, as Paul says, is if you really have to, get yourself married, but you really perhaps ought to think about the single lifestyle if you have obligations and various kinds of ways of life. So that we have some biblical bias in favor of singleness, actually, if we want to conjure it up. But it's our society almost as much as the secular as well as the sacred, I think, which has dealt within the whole single experience. About, what was it, 45% of Seattle?
Yeah, according to the census, 45% of the city is now single.
Is now single in Seattle, so we're really getting...
widows with single parents and everything.
Yeah, right, but the whole single, which is the same, ultimately it's the same experience. It may not have been the same experience that we are experiencing all along. But I think that the difficulty that is experienced in singlehood comes from the reflection of our church and the reflection of society. Someplace along the line in my own growing up, I missed all that. Somehow I missed that I had to be married. I missed that I was really not a whole person without marriage. I missed that I was a female in society who therefore was a second-class citizen. I was single, therefore a second-class citizen. I couldn't see, so I was handicapped, so I was a second-class citizen. Somehow that all escaped me. And I ended up with a drum beat that was in fact my own. And it wasn't until probably 30 that I realized that I wasn't skipping to the same beat of the rest of the world, and it began to bother me. And little help, of course, from the home front on, aren't you married yet? And I finally learned to say, well, Mom, I didn't know that the last one that asked me was going to be the last. And with that, or that I'm two-thirds married. I'm ready and the pastor's ready, but I don't have a guy. And so I've sort of trained them into the reality. And it gets a little easier once you've trained them into the reality of it all. But I think it therefore originally didn't really give me a perspective of why it was that I was a happy single person. But I think it has something to do with growing up free. And growing up perhaps as a tomboy, so that sport was more important in my life than were boys or men originally. And the church that I attended was a very mixed church, had many divorced couples in it. I saw a lot of children growing up with single parents. And so I really didn't have some of the exposure that many of you may have had to the society in which you found yourself, or that you have, in fact, found yourself. I think, therefore, that I feel very comfortable in my own skin, and as I talked to many other single people, I found that that was not true in the growing up process, or the adulthood to wherever they are now. And the feeling was that the church had not helped them in this process. And so I think one of the issues that we may want to deal with is what has the church done in a positive or in a negative sense to perpetuate the myth of the importance of marriage as the ultimate goal, that singlehood may be temporary, but that the ultimate goal for full fulfillment is certainly marriage. And the difficulty with that is not only that perhaps we haven't found anyone, but the difficulty of existing instead of living. And I think that's one of the difficulties in adult life, is because we have the reflection of marriage as the ideal, that we don't tend to live, but we tend to exist waiting for the happening. I think sometimes college students are like that. Sometimes I want to say to them, hey, why don't you just live and don't worry about 2 years from now, or that you're preparing yourself for life. That while preparing yourself for life, you're also living. And I think singlehood is one of the areas that have caused some of the difficulty. But I see again and again in the last 5 or 6 years, and perhaps the women's movement have had a positive effect on this, that singleness is not quite such a disease, and that the rise is an upward mobility in thinking, even towards the single kind of lifestyle, both temporarily and on a long-term basis. But I think the difficulties are probably still before us. I think Nancy, in her discussion last night, made quite clear what some of the difficulties are in the single life. And I might mention just a couple, and then we might discuss some of that. I think one of the advantages, or the total advantage of marriage, is kind of threefold in terms of what happens in a marriage of two people who have decided to put their lot together. I think one of them is intimacy, another is commitment, and the third is a friendship that occurs within a marriage. And that the single person then can easily live within two of three of those. That is commitment, and it may be commitment more to the profession or to a service or to friends or acquaintances, but there isn't a commitment that can happen without a marriage. The friendship certainly can happen and does. I think there is difficulty there, however, partly because we are so sex-centered in that we think of sexual fulfillment as essential, almost even in that just a male-female friendship, or even a female-female-male-male friendship, that it's a difficult kind of occurrence, because our minds then run into courtship and particularly in the heterosexual area. And finally, the intimacy simply is not there in a physical sense outside the marriage vow. And I think that this was not as difficult for the single person in the past as it is in the present. Because in the present, the liberation of individuals so that sex is a part of life outside of the marriage vows has really made singleness more difficult, because the true single person is out of it again. And so they have kind of a double whammy in being out of it, in that the intimacy they see as, the physical intimacy at least, a part of marriage and not outside of the marriage vow. But the rest of society now is saying, hey, it's all right in or out of marriage. And so the single person has, I think, an added burden that they hadn't had in the past, and that these can cause some difficulties. Any general comments just on in so far?
Gay liberation make a difference too?
In the freedom?
In the freedom that whether you want to express yourself as a single and try to establish a relationship.
Yeah, and it not only is another part of that whole intimacy question, but it puts in suspect many more people than it did in the past. And so the friendship becomes very much more difficult. And it also puts a trip on a lot of women. I don't know about men, but within my professional area, I meet many, many, many women. And more, particularly with the 30 to 40-year-old category of women, they have an added dimension of difficulty that they have to deal with that single people didn't have to deal with in the past. And it has to do with the whole gay movement, in which experimentation in that area, they are being asked to also add that. And males, too, are being suspect much more than they were in the past, so that the male-male friendships begin to be questioned, where they are not at all in the marriage. And I think that is an additional kind of burden.
Did you understand what I said?
Yes, exactly. And the same thing really is true with the male-female.
Yes.
That they are being so influenced that it has to be physical to be genuine, because society has said so. And that's where that sort of additional burden is, that, well, we simply can't have a male-female friendship. And that's really true in those 20 to 35 categories for the people. They are, they begin to see themselves as really strange if they have any sort of value. And it's really society that has set that value. Then we have the church society setting the value of marriage, which is therefore another burden on them. And it's society that has said marriage. I am convinced that people would not be thinking of marriage immediately at 18 years of age, except what society and the church has said is the ultimate. No, I'm just saying that's one of the alternatives. No, I think that in my definition of singleness, it's anyone who is not at this moment married.
Okay, so you would include...
That's one of the alternatives in a lifestyle. And it's an alternative, of course, both in and out of marriage. And that's, you know, one of the difficulties. But it's... No, I'm not saying that singleness can only be singleness if there's no physical intimacy.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't mean to say that.
I wondered if you were defining it in that way.
No, that's just another dimension that all of you have to deal with, is one's sexual self within the single society. As a matter of fact, what is the view of society on single people? What do they figure singleness is all about? Do they see it as non-physical intimacy in the individual's life?
No.
What do they see is happening?
Having a grand old time.
I mean, it is a swinger time. And so you better be careful of that single person, because obviously they are swinging. And so you're always living in a created atmosphere by an awful lot of the married people, both in the church and outside of the church. In the book, Saturday Night, Sunday Morning, which I've sort of used as a basis of looking at the single lifestyle, they talk about the difficulty that the single people experience in that everybody is sure that Saturday night, it obviously is a sexual happening, is a bar activity, and that your whole weekend you're going to be dead on Monday morning from the kind of life that you have lived over the weekend, which is another pressure that is applied. It is maybe a non-Christian kind of pressure, but it still is a peer pressure. And so if you said, I spent Saturday night reading a book, yeah, then you obviously are my age.
And it was probably an X-rated book.
Oh, right. You're reading the Sunday school lesson for a while. So that I'm not at all talking about non-intimacy. I think, in fact, that's one of the decisions that has to be made.
I am 21 years of age, and I'm a college student, and I've noticed with a lot of my college-age girlfriends, they're more career-oriented rather than settling down and starting a family. Because in today's society with the economy, more people my age, or at least the women that I know, are more concerned about making something for themselves to look forward to than settling down and depending on somebody else. So they're more after careers than a family. And that might have a lot to do with singleness right now.
I think John, is it Yoder? Who has been here several summers, has been talking about that very thing, and that with the longer the singleness occurs, the more chance of a mature marriage and the greater chance for the success of the marriage.
Statistics on this, Brian?
Yeah, there are some. Nancy, do you know, they're doing things on the 30 marriage versus the 20 marriage. Well, we know that the divorce rate on the lower, but I can find that for you. There are statistics that demonstrate that the marriages which occur later, using 30 as the cutoff in some of the research, that those marriages survive much more than the 20 to 30-year-old marriage. Now, some of that they don't know if it has to do with the new concept of the role of women and their need for identifying who they are and what they are and where they're going before marriage might be the important factor as opposed to actual maturity.
Well, I think today it's now that women have the door open to them that they can achieve a career if they want to. It wasn't, you know, in the last 30, 40 years, the door was shut on women, and a lot of women could not pursue any interests outside the home that they may have wanted to do. Now that the workplace is open to them, sure, there must be certain physical limits, yes, but the doors are open for women to find jobs in particular areas that they may be interested in, whereas they weren't before. So a lot of women are reaching out to that rather than staying home and playing mother and going for the job first.
Any other reactions on that? I think it's very true, and that it gives an alternative to examine single lifestyle much more. That women did not examine it at all unless they were going into the helping professions. And then it was, in fact, a substitute for motherhood. If I can be a teacher or a nurse or a help kind of healing profession, then I could go in it. And that's why we still have 85% of the elementary teachers being women. Because that was one of the few areas, even in 1950, that women could go into and not be suspect as why they aren't married.
I'm a married person sitting around this, mm-hmm. and I'd like to make a comment. I hear quite often the idea that if you are married, you are not fulfilled if you don't have outside work, that being just a homemaker is not fulfilling. And I'm just wondering, does this affect the 20-year-old, those in that range?
Can I answer?
Yes, sure. Would you?
Okay, number one, if I wasn't married and was not working outside of the home, I don't seem like to survive. I'd have to be working if I was not married and had a spouse who was bringing the money. So obviously, if I was not married, I'd have to work to...
Oh, wait a minute. I think that isn't what I'm saying.
Oh.
I'm saying, would this affect a person to stalling off marriage with the idea that first I must fulfill myself and really make something of myself, and then maybe possibly I could take on marriage, but marriage in itself isn't fulfilling. Is this a feeling of...
We'd have to ask the 20-year-olds.
Anybody have any thoughts?
I don't know. You're the only doctor.
Well, I have two daughters in this category. I think I would venture to say that that's part of it, that one of them is just to be married and she's 21 and 28. I think that they had this in mind, definitely. They didn't have it in mind, but they really want to get, excuse the expression, feet on the ground before they sort of focus in on this new lifestyle.
That was part of my concept when I was graduating from high school. It was always, I'm going through college, I'm going to have time on my own, then marriage. You know, I want to establish something for myself. I want to make sure that I can make it on my own before I try to depend on somebody else. And for me right now, it's the freedom of being single, knowing that, well, I just quit my job last spring, and it's like, I can do this. I don't have somebody else to worry about. I can just pick up and leave. I don't have to worry about a family, and right now it's really nice for me. Mm-hmm. Although I would at some time like to have somebody there, if, whatever. But right now I'm glad I don't.
Seems like we're assuming too that if a woman gets married, she's going to be the one who is dependent financially upon her spouse, which I think is maybe something which has evolved quite a bit too within the last decade or two. And I think that changes things a lot. I think it changes the assumption that if you're getting married, you can't also be serious about pursuing a personal career and fulfillment and those kinds of things, which is another assumption that we might be making, which is not true in many cases also.
As a pastor, I've noticed in the last couple of years that most of the couples that I'm marrying between the ages of 21 and 30 are working, both the spouses to be, husband to be and wife to be, and also they're postponing marriage. They're marrying later so that they can get their feet on the ground. I don't know what the statistics are, but I've read some of them that indicate that the trend is toward 30, 27, 28, 29, 30.
I don't know any statistics, but this will give some indication about, you know, maybe the stability of younger marriages too. In 1976 here at Holden Village, between the months of June and September, there were 30 people on the Holden staff who had been divorced, and they were all under the age of 25. And that's considering most of the staff comes from a fairly stable part of the population here. And things like that might give some indication.
But I still think that male homemaker status, with the wife being the support, is unusual enough that it will be written up in magazines and whatnot, but it still certainly is not common enough to be a pleasant situation. I think there'd be so much pressure on the male as the raising of the family person that you'd have to have awful strong support to do it.
It fits through the college years, but it always has fit through the college years since the Second World War, that the female would accept the responsibility for that. But once that role had finished, then there would be more difficulty in the whole situation. What do you find, if you had to think of one of the most, or the most, difficulty with being single?
As a young person, I think the most difficult thing is finding others to socialize with in a non-bar atmosphere type of thing. Well, the reason I say that is because I can't speak for other, you know, for older, but I'm just speaking for myself as a 24-year-old that's the most difficult thing. I guess everyone expects people our age to be out in the bars swinging around, and if you aren't into that type of thing, it's very difficult to find the socialization that all of us require as people, and especially are needed. Since we are single, we need other people. And that's one area where I think the churches are really deficient.
Absolutely.
And that they don't provide.
Absolutely.
They don't provide that type of opportunity for the socialization. And
and yet a lot of times when churches have tried to do that, it's become a real hard thing. I've had a lot of young people who say it's just like you go in there and it's like trying to match people up or dating, you know, that kind of thing. So it kind of has this false pretense of being an open place where singles can feel free to go, and yet the underlying current has not been, and they've been really disappointed. So I don't know how you...
I think part of the problem is that individual churches are trying to do things like that, and I think the answer is that churches need to band together and have opportunities.
Seattle has Solo Center, and I really don't think that's gotten up and off the ground as well as it could either. And that's a cross church.
Well, I lead a group, for instance, in my hometown. We have 25 Lutheran churches, and we all are together and have a joint ministry in that standpoint. And it just doesn't work in individual small congregations.
What do you see as the potential of not having it as a singles group, but merely as a group in the church which do the various kinds of activities or happenings that you would be interested in doing?
I like that.
I've seen this work actually in the church. Mm-hmm. It did very well. And you could be a single or you could be a couple, and no problem. You know, it was great.
What determines if it will work or not? What's the determining factors that would be a part of whether it would work or it would not work?
It's people.
People's participation and willing to chance that.
You have to give it a try.
Yeah.
Experience.
I was taught in a town of 2,500 with a lot of farmers around there. It was very couples. And we tried once to get a singles group going. We had one meeting and it was like there was just no interest generated enough to get everybody enthused to do this. And when we came to the singles thing, it was like about maybe 10 people. It's just no interest. It was really hard.
How about interest in the church as a whole and all groups in the church with, say, similar interests, such as a ski group? I am obviously sports-centered, or a bridge group, or what have you. What would determine whether that's going to work or not, given that there's 15 people that really, or 16 people that really love to play bridge? What would be the determining factor of whether that worked or not, say that the night was good?
If people saw each other as people.
And weren't hooked up as pair.
Right. We have a group, it's famous. It's called the Marching Chatter and Recreation Society, and the name, who knows how we got it. But we have both singles and couples, and it's a shame to say that the interest that brings us together is sharing a meal. It's not necessarily a sport, but we really do relate to one another and try to make it around the room at least to everyone in the evening, and it's more person to person than a couple or sex to sex. It's really good sharing, and it's become like extended family for many of us who don't have family right in the city. And when there's an occasion for any one person, you know, we're there to celebrate, whether it's a graduation or a baptism or whatever. We have both couples and singles.
The key I found in any group success, if you're going to have a group, is to make the new people feel welcome all the time and make them feel a part of the activities and keep their interests in mind all the time. If you have a group of people who start out as a ski group and just that certain circle of 15 people, one by one they're going to drop out for whatever reason or another, and you're going to be left with nothing. Your base as a group, if you want a group that's going to last, is the new people that are coming in and out of your group. And those are the people you got to be keeping in mind.
The problem is, too, that the group that you start with tends to bond if it's split
off,
and then they don't bring in the outside or don't let them in. Unknowingly, often. They just aren't aware enough and sensitive enough to the...
One of the most successful programs of this kind I've ever come across is in the city where I live, Indianapolis. It's run by a Methodist church on the north side, and it involves a minister who does nothing else. That's all in the church. He's responsible for the group. There are approximately 200 in it.
I know him.
And there are many and varied programs within the group. For instance, there is a divorce workshop for those who are hurting and going through divorce. It lasts 6 weeks, and then it begins again after a two-week pause or break. There is a Bible study group. There is a recreation group. There is a service project group, and so on and so forth. And yes, what it does is fragment, but it also gives people an opportunity to establish friendships and, as the lady here in front of me saying, a bond with those who are interested in the thing that you are interested in doing. And that seems to work. Our own congregation, as is being said, has failed because what we have is maybe 20 or 30 potential, and if we get 5 out, we're lucky. We're doing good.
What do you think is the attitude that she was talking about that would prevent a group that might not be all singles in whatever category of singles? What would prevent such a group from forming and having a positive approach within the church setting? Why doesn't it happen more if it's successful here? What is there within the church that prevents this from happening, do you think?
The size of the congregation and the numbers of persons available.
Well, if 1/3 of our society is single, then in numbers, it seems.
Well, I think the key thing to all of this is either a couple that is married and is interested in ministering to singles, or it's a single person, male or female, whatever, or a partnership type that are, you know, as far as the leadership in this particular organization or club, or whatever you want to call it, they must know what they're doing. They must provide something that meets the needs of the people in that group and minister, and they must be flexible to change their program and recognize the warning signals as to when their program is not working. They should try to sit down with the people and talk about the discussion, ask them why it's not working, come up with a solution, and revise the program. Any kind of a program should constantly be changing, because it's like anything else. People change, and society changes, and you have to adapt to those, or you're in trouble.
Do you think the churches have adapted in attitude to this 33% of the population?
No.
No.
You're asking why.
Why? How about in the attendance, even, of the single society? Why aren't they there, Nancy?
Why aren't they there? They don't feel welcome.
Everything is family oriented. You know, it's family dinners and family get together. And I think if they change part of that, I think single people would feel more included. But I feel real put out when it says a family, because I'm not a family. I'm myself. You know, and when I think of a family, I think of, say, a mother and dad and children, or a mother and children, or something. And maybe it's because I've gone through a divorce and have not been able to have a family, that's a put down for me, you know, that I don't want to hear that. But I think part of that, the language has to change to include, make it inclusive. We have to have inclusive language for the singles.
Joan, don't you think that your church reflects the attitude of society to a great deal? And what I hear you saying here is that society is changing. 1/3 of us are single, but 2/3 of us are still married, and I think the attitude of society is still geared towards that couple, and attitudes don't change overnight. Even though society has changed drastically, those attitudes have changed, and that, I say, is the root of the whole problem. And I have some difficulties with the group talking about single organizations, or single groups. I prefer to have friends who are not only single, but who are married. I don't want to have all my social life wrapped up in a single group.
I don't think, though, that there's anything wrong with single groups, though,
no.
because singles do have unique relationships that I don't know if that's the right word, but
They have unique needs.
They have unique needs that married couples don't have. I don't suggest that a person, a singles basis of his entire social life should be a singles groups or groups, but I think belonging to a singles group can be very helpful to a person and identifying how to meet certain needs. The group I had, for instance, is a singles group, and you know, we meet once a week, but we don't, our whole lives don't revolve around that singles group. We have friends outside who are married and single, and that's important too.
Last night the issue came up about that you really need to have very secure marriages or relationships, and maybe mm-hmm. that's what you were hunting for a while ago. Mm-hmm. That if there's jealousy when single people are in a mixed group with couples, then that is, could be a deterrent. But maybe that's another issue as to why there hasn't been
romance. As a married person, I listen to you talking about friendship, and I've often wondered how many marriages have friendship. They have the sex, and they have the need for each other as a family, but is the friendship there? I also find that I feel the church is lacking in the extended family, that we don't even know some of what it means. Someone dies, and you've been friendly with the person while there was the other partner, but all of a sudden you are not friendly with that man or woman because there's no partner. Someone's divorced, you don't include them. This has nothing to do with Christ. This is, has to do with our selfishness. Why do our young people quit coming to church after they're confirmed? I think this has a lot to do with all of it.
Many a pastor feels pretty helpless.
I'm sure.
The pastor can't change the attitude. All he or she can do is to be sure that he or she really believes in the essential worth of a single individual on an equal basis with the marriage. And that's where the attitude of the two-thirds of society gets mingled with the attitude of the church. So if the church says, what can we do for those poor singles? The whole show is lost, right? You've lost the crew, right, at that point, as opposed to what can we all do to make this church more enriched by the time, talents, and energies of a single people that they have to contribute, and that will enrich the lives of the married people in the church, and can have a bond of friendship that may never occur between a husband and a wife in a relationship. I sort of agree that for me, I am beyond outlooking for a future, and the single group is not appealing to me at all. The married groups are appealing to me partly because I get a chance to get at the professional men, and they're the ones I understand the most in my age category, because that's what I live and work with. And the church is the only place that I find that they might possibly not be as threatened. Now, my gray hair helps a lot. And I have found in the last 5 years that a lot more men are relating to me, and we're lunching and playing tennis and doing things that they simply were afraid to, or I was afraid to, or somebody was afraid to in the past. And I think it's too bad, therefore, that we all don't get gray at 30 in terms of relationships. And more, therefore, and that's really why I wanted to talk this evening in a way, I believe that the whole thing is mixed up with fear, being threatened, and that there isn't friendship in a husband and wife combination. And so that inside their hearts, they see some kinds of freedoms that they wish they had, but after all, they're supposed to think of the greatness of marriage. And so they want to get all of you into that same category, because then they can start dealing with you as a human being. And I think that that's one of the things that the church can do, and that we can help the church to do. It's tough because as singles, I think our self-esteem is a question that we always have to deal with, because society has, those two-thirds have said, you know, this is the best way. And so the third has to look at it as a really more difficult situation. The church that I attended for many years said, we have a couples group, singles are invited. Guess how many came? And they changed the name to Fellowship Club, but if I didn't have a folk dance partner, I really ought not to come. And it seems to me that some of those women would have been better off if their husbands had folk danced with me rather than with them and the fatigue of the next day from lack of it. But it's the principle of beatitude, I think, that is so significant to either success or failure in the church. I think this Saturday night, Sunday morning book really identifies some of the problems that occur. I think there's a lot of things in the book that aren't real. But I think there are a lot of them that are real and that are significant. I think one of the roles that for always and ever single people can do before we discuss anything else, I think is our responsibility for those of us who are happy in the single world at whatever age we are to bring into fellowship or into a friendship the recently divorced and the recent widows. I have found if I have a calling at all, and I like to think I don't often because it frees me to do what I want instead, but if I do, it has been to divorced both men and women and widowed women, both young and older, for bringing them into what the world is really like. And you cannot tell them that the world is going to be the same when they have lived 5, 10, 20, 30 years with someone and it became at least familiar and comfortable. Even in the divorce, there was certain comforts to say that I'm going home to fix dinner for my husband within society. And I think that that's one of the roles that any of you can play if you are at all satisfied, or even if you are not, for helping them understand what they're feeling is usual within the society in which we live. Because I have found that couples will bring the widow or the divorced woman or man into their group for about 6 months. And then they begin to shift around and not really to fit. And that's, during that time, I think it becomes our responsibility and really privilege to help them in that moving into a new world. And it's a world that many of us are familiar with and I think can help. And I think they in turn then have had good relationships with married people, and within the church body then, they can help the married people relate to singles. Someplace we have separated singles and married as though we are no longer all human beings who really think, feel, and act the same. That we're really not different. That we have more alikeness than differences by virtue of our Christian backgrounds and beliefs. That we have one God, one Savior, one purpose, overriding purpose, and that that should unite rather than separate us. But when that purpose, we're only half fulfilling it by being single, I think it then begins that we separate rather than gather together. And that I feel that the whole difficulty that is experienced in the church is a result of society, or that each of us can really help to change that within your own home church by virtue of your attitude. If couples are not going to change their attitude, then you have to become strong enough and satisfied within your own state, I think, to help them. That somehow or other the married people are not doing it, even if they're 2/3 to 1/3. And that it therefore becomes our responsibility. And if we can some way understand or feel our own fulfillment or wholeness within ourselves, comfortable as I see it in our own skin, then I think we're able to reach out and do that. And that maybe if we only take a little bit of a leap forward, even if they sort of step back, that we're the ones that they're feeling sorry for, or else wishing they were in our shoes, one of the two, and that therefore maybe we have a lot of the responsibility.
I'm married, and I find that it is easy to remain friends with people that never have been married or are single or are widowed. But I think it's difficult with divorced people. If you want to remain friends with both parties, they almost make you choose. And that can be very difficult if you have been friends with both people for years and then they get divorced and you're willing to stay friends, or you're not willing, but you want to stay friends with both of them. It makes it very difficult because I find that they still want to find out about each other. You know, they sort of put you in the middle of and usually you end up choosing one, the one that really you prefer as a friend to start with, and that becomes, that's the one you then you keep as your friend.
Yeah, I think just to put a little light on the flip side of that too, I think I realized more as someone who was just recently married that I was immediately put in a different class by all my single friends, and it's very hard for me sometimes to socialize with them along with my wife because of those same attitudes we've been talking about that are so ingrained. You mentioned sometimes in your groups where because of that idea that the marriage relationship is what is aimed for in many cases, that people who aren't married feel uncomfortable when they're around people who are because they feel a lack. So sometimes when you try and just be with people, oftentimes it ends up even making them feel worse, because then they feel a lack, that they don't have that companionship which you have. So it's I think it's a real job of singles to help, you know, break those stereotypes which the couples might have, but also I think, or you were mentioning the couples needed to really reach to the singles. I think it couldn't be really two-way, because it's very hard sometimes for, maybe it's easier as it gets later on down the road, but we've noticed that with a lot of our friends. We both brought different friends together now, and a lot of times they're less comfortable doing things with couples. They'd rather be with other singles.
When you get gray hair, it makes it easier.
I think it is a two-way street in that there are problems on both sides, and certainly the single feels more insecure than the male in a general sense from the reflection of society, that they have to have worked through themselves where they are and where the couple is.
And the gray hair.
Yeah, and the gray hair does help. But I don't want you all to get gray hair in order to enjoy both singles and marrieds. But I think it's maybe just awareness is what is fundamental to any action that is taken. And I think that's all we really need to think about, is that we're human beings first, and then that all of us, it's important for one another to be together.